When I first started practicing in the 60s, I would say there was a lot of technicality. And so preservation error was subject to a pretty mechanical standard. And we also didn't have a body of a certified appellate advocates who could devote themselves to preservation. So it was also, as trial lawyers attempting to do it, was sort of a hit and miss sort of thing. Over the years, as you know, the courts have been much more friendly. That trend probably began sometime in the 70s, mid-70s, and then it continued through a lot of changes to the rules of procedure, which I think have been unusually beneficial. I used to, when I was practicing in East Texas at Ramey and Flock, I had always somebody who was specially trained in preservation of error. And I still think that that is an enormous benefit. It was somebody I could send to sit in trials for 2 or 3 weeks that I really trusted and knew how the job could be done. So I think in today's environment, preserving error is easy. What has begun to trouble me over, I'd say, the last 5 to 7 years, when I've seen some of the worst preservation of error that I've seen in a long, long time, and I don't know what's happening. I don't know whether it's this problem of trial lawyers. These cases have gotten so complicated that trial lawyers get so focused and don't pay attention to preservation aspects of the case. So again, I would say that I'd love to see a subset of appellate lawyers who have a particular specialty in error preservation. But I think by and large, we are living in a much more friendly environment than we did when I started. But how about you, David? What's your view?
I think that's right. I think it's much more friendly in terms of preservation of error. We, for a period of time, especially in the 70s, and again, a little bit in the 80s, had a run in which a lot of cases, even decided at the Supreme Court level, were decided on lack of preservation. The truth of the matter is the rules have softened up, and you know, actually the application of the charge rules have softened up, even though the rules themselves have not, which has been interesting to me. And we'll talk more about pain in those cases a little bit later. But the truth of the matter is it has softened up. And Mike, I think that is the reason that we see some lax application by lawyers in preserving error.
Yes, I agree with that.
And I think that's one. The second thing is, candidly, not a whole lot of cases are really going to trial. And those that are going to trial, I know you're going to talk about this later, end up lasting for a very long time. Instead of a 4-day trial, we're looking at things that are 4 weeks, and 4 months is not outside. In those situations, it's just tough to look at error preservation. The one thing I think we ought to say is the Supreme Court, as a court of last resort, has done what all courts of last resort do. They will lessen or relax the rules to reach an issue they think is important to the jurisprudence of the state. And I think that makes sense and is something that we could expect when we went to that standard of entry into the Supreme Court, and now it's the sole one. So I think that's it.
I agree with you, David. One comment I would add, though, is for those of us who are proceduralists, I think it is still correct to say that orderly and reasonably applied procedure is the glue that holds the process together and promotes due process in the prosecution of an appeal.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about that, because I think that you're absolutely right. That makes a sense. That makes sense. We ought to have a system in which the judge, trial judge especially, has an opportunity to rule on something and not ambushed. And I'm not saying that the trial is the judge's trial, but the judge is not reversed on things that weren't really raised. The other thing is, and I think you and I will agree on this, is the real truth of the matter is preservation ought to be raised at a time that the judge can do something about it.
Oh, yeah, that's always been my test. And that's my test for preserving Castile-type error, is, did you put your objection in a form where the judge could fix it? And that ought to be enough. It ought to be a minimum at one end, but it also ought to be enough.
No, I absolutely agree. And in fact, one thing I'll tell the audience, if you read some of Mike's briefs on this issue, his briefing on preservation is always good, and it has this theme, which I think really focuses the Court of Appeals on where they ought to be. Mike, that brings us to the second pillar, and that's standards of review. What do you think?